That's out.
Oh, he dropped it. I don't believe it. That's unbelievable. He was throwing it up. He thought he had it. It was a little lollipop. And the man who did so well with the bat has taken his eye off the ball. And the ball has just dribbled out of his fingers. He was about to throw it up.
Hey, great cricket.
The Great Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a great cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the Great Cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Welcome to the Great Cricketer Podcast on today's show. In another advertisement for why this is the weirdest sport on earth, New Zealand and India will be concluded tomorrow after New Zealand play 46.1 overs of their batting innings before the rain came and ruined it all. We preview the second semi-final between Australia and England, short-term rain forecasts and barefoot Australians in a circle. Who plays and who doesn't and how much of a road it's going to be, unlike at Old Trafford overnight. Elise Perry joins the show to discuss her 7 for 22 in the Ashes and how easy a sport cricket actually is if you're a complete freak. Remaining tickets for our live shows at Birmingham, Leeds and Manchester are still available at greycricketer.club, where we'll be joined by Merv Hughes at Birmingham on the evening of day 4 of the first Ashes test, and Tim Bresnan joins Sam, Dave and I on stage in Leeds and Manchester. The very last London tickets for August 12 at Leicester Square Theatre are all at greycricketer.club. Finally, we answer your questions to this morning, which relate to net bowling against Australia Day, Netflix, tattoos and Tinder and employment relations. My name is Ian Higgins and I'm joined by Dave Edwards in Sydney and Sam Perry in Melbourne. And lads, there are now 2.5 games left in the World Cup.
Morning all. And wasn't it great to watch New Zealand's innings last night? And I know, Higgins, you were discussing this off air, but it was clearly being played on a very difficult batting wicket, which was taking a lot of spin after sort of taking a lot of seam and stuff as well. And wasn't it great just to have Steve Waugh and Sourav Ganguly both agree that Ross Taylor really needed to get on with it while Steve Waugh was just walking us through his 120 off 110 in the game before the semi-final against South Africa, just in his understated tone saying, yeah, I guess it probably was played at a modern-day pace. and then he goes on to say, this game's probably being played at more of a 1987 pace.
Oh, just directly out of the side of his mouth as well, in classic Steve Waugh fashion. Ganguly, it was his birthday actually this week. I saw that on Twitter. It was good to see a few tributes of the that famous image of him celebrating shirtless on the Lord's balcony. I can't remember when that was. Must have been the early 2000s. Fuck, that was just a great image. The virility of Ganguly. Who would you most like to see celebrating shirtless on the Lord's balcony from the Indian team, presuming they win the World Cup, which they will?
The Indian team, who would I most like to see? I reckon Chahal's got a bit about him. There's something about Chahal. He's like, I learnt the other week that he was the national Indian chess champion at age like 10 or something.
Oh, my God. That's really cool. That'd be a tough school too.
Yeah,
it would be. It would be hard. Well, what would be harder, get into the national chess team in India or the cricket team? Probably the cricket team. I agree with those thoughts. Just generally that it's often amazing to me that former international players who have played the game at the highest level played more times than anyone else, including these three guys in this podcast, yet can't identify how hard that wicket clearly was to bat. Kane Williamson's had an excellent World Cup. Ross Taylor's had a pretty good World Cup as well. These guys are set. They face 70 balls and they just can't time the fucker. And the commentators are like, well, they need to get on with it. I mean, they need to get to 275 here if they go at fucking 12 and over 15 overs. Well, the run rate's 3.5, Mark Nicholas. You reckon they're going to go at 12.5? Fuck me. You kidding?
But cricket's just easy, he goes, isn't it? What you do is you bat, you get 10 balls in, and then you immediately understand all the properties of the pitch, and then you can bat forever on it once you just kind of see and get your eye in. They should have just done that.
Did you guys catch Martin Guptill's face after being dismissed? So Guptill's just had a at a horrific tournament, and he's been dismissed scoring one from 14 deliveries. And my God, the face that came up on, you know, through the dressing room that they showed was like, it was demonic in its depression. And like,
it was completely colourless, wasn't it?
And we have like, we've all been there. Just we've all been there after just not being able to score a run or hit one off the square for a long time.
It's a dark place.
It's disappointing. I mean, because he can't leave the venue. Like, at least in grade cricket, you can just get in your car and drive. Like, I used to just drive a couple of suburbs away just to get out of the radius, like a 3 kilometre radius from the ground, because of all this negative energy from the ground. But you can't do that when you're a professional cricketer. You have to, like, front up and watch your teammates bat.
But, I mean, grade cricketers might argue you can't do that either, but obviously you did that.
I was going to say.
No, I did that. No, I'd go, I'd tell you, like, go down the highway, three tolls away.
I like how great cricket like grounds to you are just like Chernobyl, where there's like the action zone. You just need to get outside of the radiation zone to like be cleansed of cricket.
Yeah.
I hope for Toto Gupta's sake that, you know, he doesn't win the World Cup, because nothing would be less satisfying than for him to have not done anything and the team wins. So that'd be a hard thing to take. But yeah, a really strange wicket. And the wicket is the story of this game so far, because it obviously hasn't even half been completed. It's a brand new wicket at Old Trafford, and my God, it was taking some spin, but it was also seaming as well. It was really two-paced. Pandey was like getting into the wicket, rolling his fingers down the seam, just on back of a length. It looked incredibly hard to read and to play, because every ball was acting a little bit differently. At the point where the commentators were still saying that they need to go at 10 and over, Jimmy Neesham got a leading edge down to long on. So it's obviously an incredibly hard wicket to bat on. But now I feel like, who knows how the wicket's going to play? If it's going to be it'll behave better because it'll have calmed down a little bit. I mean, but they can't prepare the wicket in the time that that before this game starts again. So maybe it's going to be even drier than what it was, even though it's rained. I don't know, it's weird.
One thing I know is that we will all speculate on it despite having no qualifications in it. So at least this affords us another 24 hours of rampant speculation, like completely non-evidence-based speculation.
Yeah, and to speak about it in kind of oversimplified terms, I mean, mate, what will happen is, you know, the wicket will sweat under the covers. It'll be far more difficult to bat on tomorrow, and we can expect the ball to stick. And the wicket's going to be really difficult for Virat Kohli. Although on the flip side, BCCI controls cricket, so it'll probably be a rogue.
Yep.
Well, it's unfortunate that we can't just get out there and, like, throw a ball into the wicket and then just see how it reacts from doing that and then deduce everything from that action.
Well, what's interesting as well is that England could have been the ones playing this game on that wicket, in which case you would have to heavily fancy. I mean, given how England have batted on wickets that aren't absolute roads, you'd have to say that India would be heavy favourites going into that game. But also, it's really bizarre that it's a brand new wicket. I don't think there's been that much rain around, and yet the wicket seems to be incredibly subcontinent-y.
Is that the plural?
Well, I mean, it's a slow, two-paced, spinning wicket. I think that suits India far more than it suits any other country left in the World Cup. So I don't know. What I'm saying is the BCCI controls the wickets, even in Manchester. So I mean, it'd be interesting to know, because it is a brand new wicket at Edgbaston as well, where Australia will play. So it'd be interesting to see if there are any demons in that wicket as well. Kane Williamson rolls on with a great tournament. I think we spoke enough about the Kiwis. There weren't too many standout performances, but Jasper Brumer with the new ball, my God, he's the world number one bowler for a reason.
Man, I'm so scared of him. Hey, like we needed England to knock India out in the semi final, which is that reverse idea. But talk about demons in the wicket. Like, Australia needs demons in the wicket against England. And Jasper Brumrah just is demons for Australia. So, what a player. And the way he just strangled Nicholls and Guptill to start the match to put India on the front foot, and then just nicked off Guptill with one just, you know, like sort of angled in, straightened, swung away, took the top half of his outside of his bat, flew to first or second slip, I can't remember. Oh, he's just such a player.
He's demonic, isn't he? I'm going to articulate this terribly, but like, just, you know, when you're batting, you want to be able to watch the bowler run up fluidly from the start of their mark to their delivery. But he doesn't allow you that because he's so staccato in the way that he kind of approaches the wicket, and then it all suddenly kind of comes together at that popping crease, that action that he has. I would really fucking struggle against Jasprit Bumrah. I mean, I know that I averaged 8 in third grade and was fucking shit, but like I just would be so frightened of him.
I reckon two things there, Eddowes, in that I was watching him bowl and I was thinking, like, imagine seeing him bowl, like facing him the first time he ever showed up to India training or like whatever. Because I kind of feel like he was a net bowler who got called in and he's like just like stuttering, yeah. You know, he was the guy former, with yeah. like weird action.
He was
and like
the chess, first time you chess face champion that, of India.
You would see this guy like stuttering and you'd be like, wow, this is going to be terrible. And he rocks it down at 140 Ks an hour or whatever. And second thing is another great example of like, you will only play international professional sports if you're a genetic freak, because you look at like Bumrah's arm, like the flexibility in his elbow and his forearm and his femurs is just completely genetics. So kids, if you want to make it to elite levels, don't bother unless you're a genetic freak.
Yeah, he was definitely created in a science lab by the BCCI.
Mm. Yep.
it's such a like a really fine line to like praise Jasprit Bumrah for being a really good cricketer and then just slightly suggest that he's like some kind of monster. you know. yeah.
Cricket Frankenstein.
Well, as we said before, there's no market in India, so you know, we can do what we like. Pez, how's this remaining match going to go, do you think? Put on your future glasses here. 4 overs left of the innings. I mean, do New Zealand finish their innings, or is it going to be they stop there and get a Duckworth Lewis thing?
Oh yeah, a Duckworth Lewis thing. I think that they've done really, really well to get to 211 for 5 from where they were, and they've got 23 balls to obviously increase that total. I mean, I still think that. Let's just say the wicket remains relatively the same. That's probably the safest bet. I still think India have too much class and New Zealand might have to have, you know, just slightly, like just not enough in terms of their bowling quality to restrict India. But, you never know, I guess. I mean, I'm just looking at their side now. Lockie Ferguson's back in. That's really good. That perhaps they would have been well served to play two spinners, but obviously Ferguson's in. So it'll be a really big job for Mitchell Santner. You know, I think if New Zealand do manage to pull this out of the bag somehow, Santner will probably take 3 or 4. But I think India probably still just has too much firepower. It could just be one of those ones, mate, where like New Zealand have made the wicket look really hard, and then India do it in 30-odd overs.
Possibly, yeah. I think if New Zealand gets to 230, 240, I think that's a really competitive score on that wicket anyway. But it'd be interesting to see what happens. I suppose difficult to talk much about, you know, a game happened for 46 overs that yielded no result and will be finished tomorrow. So let's move on to Australia and England. And we saw that Jus Langer has used all of his Zen techniques and brought Australia together in a circle, barefoot. And I don't know what the point of that was, but... anyone got any takes on this preparation leading into a World Cup semi-final?
I mean, I liked it. It's different to the usual pre-game routines of telling highly exaggerated sex stories to, you know, take your shoes off and feel the grass between your toes and the Earth's natural energy underneath you or some shit. I think earthing's meant to transfer those earthly electrons into the body or something and kind of, I think that's the idea around it. I think Langer to me just reminds me of kind of the boss who has a mental breakdown, but then goes to like a hippie retreat and comes back completely enlightened, like with a holiday tan, and just wants to force all these newfound beliefs on everyone. And it's initially kind of jarring, and you're all looking at each other, but you do it because he's your boss. Like you walk into his office at 3 p.m. to ask for a performance review, and he's on the ground meditating with his suit hanging up.
Yeah.
That's the kind of guy I think Langer is. He's like Don Draper in the final episode of Mad Men when he goes all hippie. But then he goes on to write that iconic Coke commercial. So I expect Langer to go on and win the World Cup in the Ashes just like Don Draper went on to dominate advertising.
And then get some coke. Pez, Wade v. Hanscom.
Yeah, so, well, news has emerged overnight that, so Langer's come out and said Hanscom will play 100%. He deserves it. He was really stiff not to be on that tour. So Hanscom's in. However, it appears that, you know, I'm not sure this has actually been said on the record, but probably has been said to journalists that Glenn Maxwell's spot might be in question. And so when it was asked, when Langer was asked about whether Wade would play too, he sort of didn't say no. He said, well, he's in the squad. And he's a chance. I don't know if they're going to sort of spring a surprise selection. Maxwell's obviously, you know, he seems to be a walking wicket with the bat at the moment. I know I said that last time. And then the other thing is it appears that Stoinis has pulled up fit, which is really strange. So that Langer was describing a heated net session that brings the best out of Stoin. So just a bit of nickname there. But yeah, apparently, you know, he was being bombarded by the quicks, came through really well, bowled really well. So was he just lying about his side strain?
You can't pick a bloke from the fucking nets. Like, at what level does this stop? Like, oh, yeah, he smashes him in the nets. Like, does this ever end? Like, just a bloke who just looks good? Is this what like Australian cricket just relentlessly just picks the best-looking bloke? I'm like, you know, I've said it before, so we love a bit of Stoinis here. Well, I do anyway. I love a bit of Stoin. But my goodness me, like, has not done anything for Australia in, like, in a year. So, like, but
like, no, but that's not true, he goes, because week in, week out, he looks unbelievable in the nets.
It must be incredible. Don't get me wrong. And, I you know, if Cricket Australia can release some Coley-esque footage of, you know, Stoinis in the nets that we can all fucking jerk off to like we did with Coley. It's like, oh, the noise from his bat. Oh, fucking spare me. But yeah, I mean, like, I can't have Stoinis, but I understand the balance thing. It does make the balance of the side much better. But what makes the team better overall is picking 11 of your best players. And this is kind of the problem with, like, Australia not caring about ODI cricket for 3.5 years and kind of still figuring out the best team as they're going into a semi-final. Because, like, I mean,
he goes,
I said last show, like Maxwell, like, yeah, I'll believe that he needs 120 every time he comes to crease, despite there only being 15 balls remaining, that being mathematically impossible. I'll believe, but Wade is like scoring runs and has done for 2 years, so he's probably the best bet.
But he
like
goes,
what happens if the wicket is a bit in it?
He goes, Wade is also, by all reports, been unbelievable asset around the boys. I don't know if you've been reading up on that, but ever since he's got there, he's just the ultimate team man. He'll do anything. He's been bowling really well in the nets. He's just been, you know, providing good body language at all times and all costs. He's just been an unbelievable asset already. So his job's done. He doesn't actually need to play cricket ever again. If he can just kind of generally be in the vicinity of Australian cricketers for the rest of his career, then I think that'll have a net positive effect on our results.
Isn't Wade just the most malleable person ever? Because, like, there was talk when he was going to get brought back into the test side that, like, well, if you tell him to be a nice guy, I'm sure he'll be a nice guy. I think he was just being told to sledge, so he sledged. You know, like, I've seen him bowl in test matches. You know, he'll bat wherever you want. He's just the most, like, what a malleable character.
I think he
like,
did sandpaper. I think they tried to pin sandpaper on him.
They tried to, and he was happy to go down with it. You know, he was a young guy, didn't really know his way, just trying to fit into the team.
That was
26-year-old Cameron Bancroft, who'd already captained Western Australia by that point.
Didn't know any better.
that's interesting, though, Pez. They're going to go with Hanscom, and fair enough, too, because he was unlucky to miss out on the tour. What would you guys do? What would you guys do with Maxwell?
You know, if Hanscom's playing, it means Smith will go to 3, Hanscom will bat 4. And then the question becomes, what do you do with number 5 and 6? Like, if Hanscom's going to play, then you have to play Maxwell. I'd be reluctant to drop Maxwell because you'd always wonder what if. You know, he still has that capability to win a match. And you sort of feel like every match that he doesn't produce in brings him closer to the one that he will. So, but you know, then you weigh that against the rationality of him literally having a technical deficiency against short bowling and England having the two almost quickest bowlers in the competition.
But it's so fun wondering if this is going to be the game where he does everything we've ever dreamed of.
That's right, and that's all we want. It's all we want, not asking much, just for 140 not out of about 80 balls and 10 really tidy overs, and perhaps one of the great catches of the World Cup. That's all we're asking from him. But, yeah, I'd play Maxwell. I think the Stoinis question is a very interesting one. Like, I can see how they're thinking about it. Like, because I think, again, rationally, like, you could put Mitch Marsh next to Marcus Stoinis now and say he may well produce better than Stoinis because, injury or not, Stoinis hasn't really contributed this World Cup with the bat nor the ball, other than kind of holding up an end with the ball for a couple of overs. So, but then again, you can't, you know, if they've persisted with him this far, he's part of the team, he's part of the balance, he's part of the boys. It would be extremely harsh to just bring Mitch Marsh in on a form basis.
Eddowes, do you want to go back a time in evolution and pick Mitch Marsh?
No, I don't. I just felt like the book was closed on Mitch Marsh. I'm just really shocked and surprised to see him back. Like, I know why he's back. It's a like-for-like thing. But it just doesn't feel right, does it? I mean, you're saying that Stoinis has been there all tour. You know, he arrived with the boys. He's been training with the boys. The boys have been around him, and he in turn has been around the boys. To bring in an outsider like Mitch Marsh and then just kind of throw him into a semi or even a final at the expense of someone who's been with the boys, you know, for the best part of a couple of months, I just think that's just not right. I think that's just not right, he goes.
And, it's a bit of a like an ex-girlfriend situation. Like Mitch Marsh, it's a little bit of like an absence makes a heart grow fonder. You sort of forget the parts he didn't like that much. And the current girlfriend, Stoinis, that is, you can see the warts and all at the moment.
But the current girlfriend, she's here, though.
Because Mitch Marsh was like, he was, you know, Shane Watson reincarnate. You know, he was levers, he was rig, he was 140s, he was hitting long bombs, but it never really worked out that way, did it?
But especially, we are looking fondly back on him now. I mean, that was the relationship of a lifetime, Shane Watson.
No, wasn't it?
I mean, the forgotten party here, of course, is Nathan Coulter-Nile, who has contributed in this World Cup.
That was just a holiday romance.
It was a fling. It was a bit of a summer fling.
That West Indies game.
He wasn't in the team long enough to understand or figure out exactly what a Coulter-Nile is. But, I mean, he is another all-rounder in the squad, and he has contributed more than, well, Mitch Marsh hasn't had a chance, but certainly more than Stoinis. I really worry about that position as a whole because I don't know if there's a right answer. I mean, like Stoinis was injured first time, injured his left side strain, then injured his right side strain, has looked out of sorts, hasn't bowled particularly well.
Both his sides are strained.
Like no runs anywhere. It takes ages to get off the mark, real slow. The power's gone out of his game. Haven't seen him bat well for Australia in a year. I don't know. But, I mean, to that end, you're probably better off picking Wade there. You know, but then the changes the balance of the side, then you rely on Glenn Maxwell's overs, in which case he'll get targeted by England. Yeah.
Do you reckon the selectors are thinking all of these things?
I mean, I hope so.
It'd be really great to see Wade in the lineup, like just as a surprise, because the guy, you know, we've said in previous casts, he hasn't missed time to ball in 2 years. He's in the absolute form of his life. He knows his game. It could be a wonderful story to bring him into the semi-finals out of nowhere, and for him to just put together two magnificent innings to take Australia to a World Cup. It's unlikely, though. I can't believe we didn't think of it earlier, though, because the only person they seem to sort of hate more than Matt Wade, although willing to cast aside more quickly, is Glenn Maxwell. So, which is, you know, historically proven over the last decade just about. So I'd feel like, as much as I want Wade in, if it's at the expense of Glenn Maxwell, you're like, oh, no, I just want all the scintillating players to be in at the same time.
All right, well, we have been lucky enough to secure Elise Perry as a guest. She took 7 for 22 in the most recent ODI, completely destroying England. They're 6-0 up in the Ashes series before they head to Taunton on July 18 for the test match there. Australia only need to draw that game to secure the Ashes, then they won't be able to be surpassed. They'll be able to retain the Ashes. So let's get Elise on the phone.
Harry Broad, good morning. You've been reading The Great Cricketer.
But most of the book has taken up with proving he isn't good enough. Locker room language is rife and sexual immaturity is rampant. Having sexual relations is called burgling a chop. I'm very disappointed. I thought this should be a great book.
Boys, Elise Perry's returned for a second time onto The Grade Cricketer. It's an absolute pleasure to have her on. 7 for 22 the other day against England. Pez, I just want to kick off by saying, firstly, thanks for championing us the last time you came onto the show for a reply.
I can't believe you started with that. Yeah.
but secondly,
turn off at the thought of that.
Well, you can do what you want, frankly, after your most recent figures. But I guess my first question is, how easy is cricket for you?
Mm. Yeah, well, thanks for the question, champ. it's been a dream start for us, that's for sure. In the Ashes over here, and the first three games for us, some ODIs, and had you have said on our way over here that we would have won all three of them and been 6-0 up in the series, I think we all certainly would have been really chuffed and definitely taken it. So it's been a nice start.
There was a fantastic piece written about you in The Good Weekend recently, Elise, by Conrad Marshall. And one of the interesting things you said within it was, maybe interest in women's cricket will be more sort of obvious to you if people started criticising your innings. I'm not sure if it came across the right way through the piece, but I just wanted to say, I just thought your last dismissal was a bit too close to cut.
You and most other people, I've had that one just dissected by my dad from back home. So, whatever you say, we'll only add to it.
Well, I was lining up a tweet to that effect, and I thought, I've got to be sensitive about this. And as I was thinking about it, I let it go for a few hours and I returned and I saw that you took 7 for 22, so I just thought, no, I'll just leave.
By all means, haul me over the hot coals. It was a horrific shot, and I deserve to be publicly shamed for it.
Self-loathing is important in cricket. Elise, just back to England's capitulation. I mean, you rolled them for 75. I'm just curious, at what point in their innings did you guys start hysterically laughing upon taking each wicket? Is when they're five down or six down? Or...
when the tournament shed a little bit more fight than what maybe the top order did, I suppose we felt reasonably chuffed about ourselves, but I'm very hesitant to say that because unfortunately, there's a lot more cricket to play and a few more points on the line. So, they've had a bit of a rough trot of it, that's for sure. And that last game, nothing went their way, unfortunately. Actually, very fortunately. The test match coming up will be a pretty good fight. I think they'll be pretty keen to come out and throw a few more punches than they did last game.
So, Pez, Belinda Clark has said that you are the most genuine Australian all-rounder of any gender or any generation. Cricket Australia award a medal that adorns her name. I think they're going to make statues of you one day. So what do you say to Belinda's comments?
Well, hopefully those statues are probably like 5 kilos lighter, than the actual real-life version.
She's putting a request.
That's very kind of Belinda, especially coming from probably our greatest ever female player. So I very much appreciate it, but I'm not sure that's quite right. I've still got plenty left to improve on until I get to that kind of status.
Pez, obviously you've taken a 3-0 lead or a 6-point lead in the Ashes over England at the moment, and you moved to Taunton for the Test match. Don't really want to go too much into, the fact that there needs to be more test cricket played at the women's level. I more just want to talk about the fact that you hit 213 not out last time and are you going to better that this time?
Depends how much of a road the wicket is, really, doesn't it? Because nothing's much better than North Sydney to bat on. But, oh, gosh, I don't know. I would be absolutely stoked if we can win that test. And to your point, like, this multi-format series that we play against England, where we play the three ODIs in a test match and then T20s, and they've all got points and they all basically total up to the Ashes, is, I guess, really relevant to women's cricket. And it sounds a bit odd probably for anyone that just follows the men's game, but for us, we play so much white ball cricket that it's really nice for them to be counted and to be important. And it sort of gives a lot of significance to each format of the game too. So from that point of view, like, if we could play similar, you know, series against other top nations in the world, that would dramatically increase the amount of test matches we play. But I think also it'd be, yeah, a pretty cool concept to have around the world.
Lisa, Prime Minister Scott Morrison has thrown his support behind former cricketer Ash Barty several times recently. And in fact, he's tweeted about her in, I think, two of his last seven tweets. Yet, and correct me if I'm wrong, he hasn't publicly congratulated you for your 7-for-22, which has almost surely sealed the Ashes. So you obviously are devastated by this brazen oversight.
Oh, no, we FaceTimed the other night, so it was fine.
Oh, wow. what's his technique like on FaceTime, like too close to the camera?
He's a bit like my dad, actually. He's like, the longer it goes on, the more, like, his face that just kind of disappears off the screen. He doesn't realise that he's actually holding the camera and I can't see it if it's not pointed at him. But
at what point in the conversation did he start speaking in tongues?
Just after we spoke Pig Latin, actually.
That's funny.
I was just actually wondering, Elisa, you know, everyone's a competitive beast and there's been a lot of talk about Ash Barty recently being, you know, world number one female tennis player. What was a bigger thing for you this week, taking 7-for-22 or Barty crashing out of Wimbledon to restore you as the number one female sports person in Australia?
Oh, you can't ask that.
You don't have to answer it.
So indulgent.
Oh man, I think the best part was I don't know, just seeing England as upset as they were probably after our game was the best part. We actually watched Ash's game on the bus. It's pretty amazing. Maybe the best thing about England is our bus. It's kind of like a house. Like, we've got five or six flat screens on there, we've got a fridge, we've got a kitchen, we've got a coffee machine, tables and all sorts going on in there. So, we watched her from the bus on a trip from one hotel to the other. And, it was real shame because she's obviously playing really well. Plus, she's just an absolute legend. But I'm sure she'll be back bigger and better for sure.
Alisa, I noticed that Ben Sawyer's helping you guys over there, assistant coaching. You obviously worked with him previously at the Sixers. I was sort of watching you bowl the other day, and when I was seeing you bowl in Australia, you sort of have a very natural sort of off-cutters action. But in England, you seem to be standing the seam up a bit more. Is it a change of wrist position? Like, is that something Ben's been working on with you? I mean, what's the change been between how you've bowled in Australia and then just swinging the ball beautifully without swing in England?
I suppose, like, naturally the conditions are probably a little bit more conducive to swing over here, but it's definitely something that I've worked on with Benny. We do, like, a lot of, sounds a bit silly, but we throw the ball to each other a lot, and it's just kind of all about trying to get the swing and, I guess, a perfect position for it to swing out. We always tinker around with that, especially at training, and it's just sort of, I suppose the last game, you know, the conditions are great for it as well, and it just clicked for me, but it's just funny. I think, like, my wrist comes in and out of being in good position. So sometimes I naturally get that cut just because I probably lose my wrist a little bit. But I'll save the rest of the technical jargon for another time. But it's been really great fun working with Benny.
Elise, Piers Morgan had a celebrity cricket match the other day. You must have been disappointed not to get the call up to that. I mean, Piers Morgan.
Did Brett Lee play in that?
I don't know. It was Chris Gayle, Kevin Peterson, Piers Morgan, just a lovely bunch of blokes to spend 8 hours with on your weekend.
I'll take that as a comment.
No, it's a question.
Elise, you've recently moved to Melbourne from Sydney, so I'm just going to get really insular here. You're obviously previously in Sydney's Chatswood. Now you're in Melbourne's Windsor. That's very close to home for everyone else here on the cast. Who's got the better coffee?
Coffee Club Melbourne. Westfield, Chatswood Westfield.
Yeah, muffin break. In the food court. Where I never bought muffins. on sheer weight of numbers, Melbourne.
I want to know, during the promotion of this show on Twitter last night, I was scrolling through the notifications and former Australian player Kristen Beam said, quote retweeted, she said, "Hope she talks about that fist pump in relation to your wicket celebration." So, thoughts?
Oh. Well, sure. Pretty simple. Kristen basically messages me before my game and tells me that if I take a wicket, I have to fist pump. So I try to. It doesn't come particularly naturally. I'm not great at celebrating, but yeah, the fist pump has sort of become my thing. It's kind of, I guess, a little signal to Beamsy, really.
Right. Is that like David Warner's, jump in the air post 100? Maybe you can kind of use that as a sponsorable action. Get Toyota on board.
I probably have to come up with a brand that is synonymous with a fist pump. I can't really think of one, but maybe.
F45. Actually, F45, if you are listening to this, I'm actually in the market for some fitness deals. But anyway, it's just because I've recovered from an injury and stuff, but sorry to railroad that. I've been meaning to get that out there.
It's all yours.
I'm sorry, Elise. I just noted in the Good Weekend article, Elise, just the way this was written as well sort of made me giggle, but it was describing you putting your equipment on, your kit on before you batted, and Conrad wrote, "First the right pad, then the left one. Always right, then left." She does the same thing with suit and socks and sleeves with everything. I mean, like OCD is not to be mocked in a joke, but, is it helpful to have it when you play cricket?
It's not unhelpful. I don't know when that started. The worst part about it is it's literally invaded every part of my life. So, even if I'm going down the shops and I'm putting thongs on my feet, I always put my right one on first. So, you can say I've got some issues, but that's all right.
I'm just wondering how far that extends. But, anyway.
Yeah. Well, I think
do you read books from right to left, like just Japanese books?
That's dyslexic, isn't it?
Yeah. That's a different thing. That's a different thing.
Yeah. Was that Mandarin? Elise, I think we've exhausted our mainly silly questions this time around, but thanks so much for being available. Congratulations on an incredible haul of 7 for 22. Please keep destroying England. One of the great lines actually in that last piece as well was about the county members in the Canterbury Pavilion groaning audibly in pained British tones every time was taken, which is gladdens the soul down here. So congratulations. We'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks, guys. Lovely to chat as always.
We great cricketers work hard. Everything has to be hard at all times. Work hard. Circuit hard. Just be hard. Never smart. Always hard.
Some developing news out of the great cricketer, media juggernaut. We're exploring the creation of our own custom budgie smugglers. And the running theme at the moment is all-time alphas. And I just want to discuss with you, Dave and Higos, who might adorn a set of smugglers for the all-time alpha range. Off the top of my head, I'm thinking, you know, Faf, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Perhaps Alan Border's beard. Perhaps Steve Waugh's squinty eyes. Mm. Ricky Ponting's forearms.
Yep.
Clive Lloyd.
Keith Miller's Brill cream hair.
Hmm. So we're thinking of doing it just per body part.
Right.
So, you know, Michael Atherton's brain.
Alan Border's mouth. If we could get it. To Craig McDermott on that tour game when he told him he's going to send him home.
Yeah.
Mid over.
Colin the big man de Grandhomme's moustache.
Yeah. Mm. The old gunslinger.
Yeah.
Yeah, the old time Alpha range is something we're considering. Please feel free, listeners, to submit any considerations for that all time Alpha range. We're just thinking of sort of badly cut out pictures of either profile pics or mugshots or body parts and stuff, just at different angles over these smugglers, which we'll all adorn when we go for our various water based activities. Whether that be, a swim for your own fitness, or whether it be being afraid to shower nude post day's play.
Wet and Wild theme park on the Gold Coast.
Or just sliding on the covers when it's raining.
If you don't want to get involved in that, you can purchase your own custom smugglers. You can create your own design or get the nice Gary's, which is a couple of pictures of Nathan Lyon all over your pecker there. And you can do that at budgiesmuggler.com.au.
Hashtag AskTGC. Just before we get into the questions for this morning, this evening, this afternoon, whatever time you listen to this, the Great Cricketer, greatcricketer.club for all of your live show tickets, where there are very few remaining tickets for London on August 12, and tickets remaining for our Birmingham show, Leeds show, and Manchester, which I said at the top of the show. So greatcricketer.club. Do get around the boys. All right, Jowie writes in and he says, I have recently been invited to netball for the touring Oz A squad because they fancy my quick left arm seamers that slide 2.5 feet down leg. Now that I've finished flexing more than Higos in front of a body-length mirror, it reminds me of playing second grade and being invited to bowl on the first net, afraid to offend or disrupt my hero's day in any way. Which takes me to my questions. Should I celebrate when I inevitably drag Marcus Harris's bat away from his body and nick him off to third slip? And how many pairs of gloves should I ask for?
Really interesting that someone who's clearly good enough to be invited to bowl to essentially half the Ashes test squad is still taking the opportunity to write into the Great Cricketer, like just on the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's flexing. He's flexing on us. Because, I mean, he gets the ball to international cricketers. It's not necessarily a reflection of your standards. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. But, I mean, like, I think to answer his question, I mean, David Warner hit a net bowler in the head with a cricket ball. It wasn't just an off-field altercation. And then that guy got, a full signed shirt from the Australian team. So, I mean, that's the least you should be asking for, Jowie, I reckon.
I'm quite jealous of Jowie. I mean, I always dreamed of being a young net bowler. And I think there's always, in all of us, there's something inbuilt that if you bowl well and you can get the attention of someone, then you can just suddenly be, like, inexplicably whisked into the test team. Like, I'm sure he's a pom, but, I remember when I was a kid, my parents got me one of those books where you can insert your child into the storyline.
Nice.
So basically I was me, but I was plucked from obscurity to play for the Sydney Swans. And I ended up taking like a specky on Warwick Capper's shoulders to win the grand final. What I'm saying here is that, I'll do the same for my son, except the book will be about him bowling in the nets and then there's an injury to Mitch Stark. And then he suddenly takes a 5-for at the SCG on debut at the age of 8.
I reckon there's nothing good can come of this except for your own personal memories. I remember when the West Indies came out to Australia it must have been the early 2000s, and Brian Lara was still playing, and the talk was that this touring team in the West Indies were like really out of shape and stuff, and Jules Stevenson, who was a great first grade bowler, he played at Gordon and played at my club, he bowled Brian Lara. and he was just sledged mercilessly in the Sydney Morning Herald as like some podgy, balding grade cricketer cleaned up Brian Lara. So it's like even in your wildest dreams, I mean, George Servant was an excellent first grade bowler who one season took 40 wickets. But if you're a nobody and you bowl one of the greatest batsmen of all time, still doesn't matter. So just sledged
by
a
pudgy, balding Sydney Morning Herald journalist.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Aiden writes in. Choppers, he says. The late night sport is wearing me pretty thin. I've made myself nocturnal to watch H. Nichols kick a straight one, R. Taylor run out our best player, and then our second best. CDG dish out another cough lozenge when we need runs. Any Netflix recommendations? I was born in the late 80s where I had to endure some slow, grey, beta New Zealand cricket. Australia was an absolute juggernaut, producing some glistening alphas. I'm sure your Gilchrist poster was better than my Adam Pororo. Of Adam Pororo mortgages poster. That's obviously an old familiar feeling. That's it.
Just on Adam Pororo, he was responsible for the world's most unprintable sledge ever in a match against Australia when Mark Waugh sledged him. I honestly cannot repeat what Pororo responded with, but it's available on Google. Just type in Adam Pororo Mark Waugh sledge and you'll... see what I mean. Netflix recommendations, anyone? I just finished the Madeleine McCann documentary series.
Yeah, that was pretty good, wasn't it?
Yeah. Don't want to spoil it. She's still missing. Yeah. But it was good.
Well, I think they're teasing it for a second season. I think that's how that's going on. I've actually just started to get into Chernobyl.
Meant to be
and
very
also
good.
The HBO series, yeah. I've been working on a personal tweet for years. Like literally, it's been in my drafts for like 2 years.
This is your startup.
Yeah.
Just grinding away.
But it's like I was born 2 months after one of the reactors exploded in Chernobyl in 1986. And so far, my only superpower is, insert joke here, can't quite get it right. Had it in the drafts for 2 years.
Keep at it.
Yeah, keep it. I'll find something.
Very good. Okay, this one's from Jake. G'day, Higos, Pears, and Dave, if you're reading. I'm currently travelling Europe and thought I'd jump on Tinder to see if I can meet some local singles in the multiple areas I'll find myself in over the next month. Thoughts on putting a screenshot of my cricket stats in as one of the biopics on my Tinder bio? Keep in mind my batting average is 9 with 26 runs to my name and I've taken 7 wickets at 17.14. Will this get me a stat on the circuit? Or should I leave it with just a photo of me showing off my KFC tattoo on my leg? Cheers, Jake. Oh,
so this is just yuck in all areas. KFC tattoo on your leg makes me want to throw up. That's an idea. And obviously, he goes, you've selected this question.
He's one of those blokes that like takes a photo of his leg with his KFC tattoo and then like posts it to the KFC Twitter account and trying to get like free nuggets for a year or something.
I'm not on Tinder, but is this becoming a trend, the placing of my cricket stats as a biopic?
No, I don't think. I think you can be misled if you read the amount of inboxes that we get with similar jokes. But no, it's not a real thing. I mean, it's not a common thing.
Also in Europe, I mean, I know that they're trying to grow cricket in the region. The Euro Slam is on soon, actually, isn't it? Chris Lynn will be there.
That's right. Maybe
you could hang out with Linny. We could connect him with Linny and he could just orbit in his vicinity. That probably would yield more success than just posting your MyCricket stats. And
it's really interesting how young people communicate on dating apps, said Granddad. But like... I remember we did that show at O's in Brisbane. Oh, we did the Brisbane Great Cricket Awards a couple of years ago. And I was talking to some young upstarts there and we were talking about Bumble or something. And they were all like, so what's your pickup line? And I was like, I just say hello. And they were like, that's wild. What? No, you don't. That's so lame. What? And I think they're like still at the age where
I don't
like,
remember that.
They buy into the idea that like if you say certain words you unlock, you know, a woman's underwear and they are just powerless to your, you know, words. I think they like read the game too many times.
The game. Like, yeah. The Bible.
Yeah. No, if you just be a normal person, then that's a great way to start a conversation. Then you know, get whatever you want there. You know, I'm not saying you need to form meaningful relationships all the time, but you know, you can get what you want. But yeah, if you just start by saying hello, that's a start. So Jake, no, I would not do the tattoo or cricket stats thing, at least until you get your average up into the early 20s. Joseph Askham, hi fellas. Looking forward to seeing you guys at your London show, or stoked as you might say. My question relates to an employment issue. I'm interviewing someone who proudly states on his CV that he has played first-class cricket. Obviously, I immediately Googled him and he has a Crick Info site, has played a few county games and was an age group international. The bloke can clearly cricket. Firstly, he claims to have developed, and I quote, excellent interpersonal skills through playing competitive sport. What the fuck is he talking about there? Secondly, if I give him the job, who is the alpha here? I love cricket and I'm actually having a decent start to the season, 68 average with a bat, and I don't even care if that comes from scores of 8 and a fluky 60 not out and a DNB. The stats don't lie. But this bloke is obviously better than me at cricket and therefore everything. What happens when I ask him to do something at work and he pretends to have forgotten my name? And finally, how long after I inevitably employ him can I ask him to come play for my club and bask in his reflected glory? All the best, Joe from England.
I think Joe has the upper hand. Joe's the alpha because Joe clearly controls this person's employment capability. I would love him to challenge the potential employee in the interview around the meaning behind excellent interpersonal skills. Like, so he has to stay very quiet, Joe, about, like, Joe has to stay very quiet about his own cricket background and his knowledge of cricket and what interpersonal skills really means, because it'd be really dysfunctional, and he has to sit there and listen to this guy talk about, you know, what it actually means to play cricket and the dysfunction surrounding it. He'll eventually employ him and then ridicule him for that interview.
There's some great interpersonal skills to be learned in cricket, though, Pez. I mean, listening skills, like nodding approvingly in the stretching circle. Non-verbal communication, just avoiding eye contact with lower graders. That's an interpersonal skill.
That would be, like, you'd really respected, I suppose, in a job interview if someone actually said that. Oh, yeah, so there's this thing called the stretching circle where people share important sexual tales to each other. And it's really important that you actually nod and make sure that you wait your turn to tell your story.
What's an example of good decision-making? Oh, the time I took a cab home after 8 beers in the dressing room as opposed to taking on the back roads.
When I saw that best fielder pick up the ball, and I declined a second run.
Okay, let's do the last one, lads. Matthew Edstein writes, lads, 2 years or so ago, my wife bought me a Kindle. In between reading both The Great Cricketer and Tea and No Sympathy, I've actually rather impressed myself with the quality of literature I've gotten through. Robert Hughes' The Fatal Shore, Charles Dickens' Great Expectation, and Michelle Obama's Becoming. About 2 months ago, we changed internet provider at home, and I have not yet connected my Kindle to the new network. Since then, my wife has asked me what I'm reading several times. Given that I haven't been able to download any new books in the past 2 months, my increasingly sheepish response each time is TGC. I have now read The Great Cricketer 3 times and Tea and No Sympathy 4, in brackets Tea and No Sympathy is slightly better in my view. Throughout my rereads, I've thoroughly enjoyed guessing which one of you experienced in real life the events described in the book. Who was caught shadow batting naked by their dad? He goes, is my guest. At some point, I really will have to connect to the new network and download some new books. To that end, I guess my question is this. Are you writing a new book? And if so, when will it be released? Kind regards, Matt.
Some good literature that he got through there beforehand.
Yes.
Great Expectations. Yes. Oh, yeah. Referenced in Tea and No Sympathy.
It is.
A few times. The Fatal Shore will be next. We haven't really discussed doing another book. I think it will happen when it kind of jumps out at us to do it, right?
I think it'll happen. It won't be this summer. It won't be in Christmas stockings this year, unless, you know, Alan and Unwin decide to, like, rebrand Tea and No Sympathy to make it look like a different book by just changing the cover or something. But
we could do a foreword to Tea and No Sympathy, like, you know, some books they re-release it with the author's
updated
foreword.
Editions.
Also, no, it wasn't me who was caught shadow batting naked. It wasn't anyone. It's a fictional book.
Yeah. So amazing.
I believe.
I like that everyone thinks everything in the book actually happened to one of us.
Yes.
I mean, Pez, yeah. To be fair, you did visit W.G. Grace's tombstone when meeting up with your ex-girlfriend in England for coffee.
Some things are based on fact, to be fair, but yeah.
He goes, you went to a gay bar and danced on a table with your shirt off, shrieking lads, lads, lads in unison with your teammates. But these are things that happened and will continue to happen.
That did. That's
and you
exactly
fell out
right.
with your dad in the backyard showdown.
Now everyone knows who wrote what bit. All right, thank you so much for Elise Perry for coming into the show. That's the Great Cricketer Podcast for today. We'll be back in a couple of days' time to review the second semi-final, England and Australia. So we'll catch you then.